the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Friday, March 13th. Ezequiel Cervantes, age 66, of Odessa, passed peacefully, surrounded by family, on Saturday, March 7th. Ezequiel was born May 14, 1953, in Big Spring, to Jesus and Jesse Ontiveros Cervantes. He is preceded in death by his parents, brother Oscar Cervantes, sister Mary Helen DePorto, nephew Oscar Cervantes, Jr., and sister-in-law Martha Cervantes. He is survived by wife Carmen Cervantes, son Jesse Cervantes, two grandsons, sisters Rosario Medrano and Lucy Robles, and brother Juan Cervantes, all of Big Spring. A visitation was held Thursday at Odessa Funeral Home. A funeral service will occur Friday, March 13th at 2 p.m. at St. Mary's Church. A burial will occur Friday, March 13th at Ector County Cemetery in Odessa. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.odessafuneralhome.com for the Cervantes family. Jerry Lou Meyer Nickel died peacefully at Madison Medical Resort on March 2nd in Odessa at 88 years of age, surrounded by family. Jerry was born on December 16, 1931, in Independence, Kansas, to Jane Duesta and Walter Meyer. Jerry is survived by her daughter, Catherine York Norwood, and her husband, Donnie, of Odessa, one granddaughter and three great-grandchildren, and four great-great-grandchildren, and son-in-law, Bobby White, of Odessa, stepsons Jay and Cindy Nickel of Wimberley, Ron Nickel of Tucson, Arizona, and Mark and Janie Nickel of Sonoma, California. She is preceded in death by her husband James A. Nickel, son Kenneth M. York, grandson Michael J. York, mother Jane Cash Meyer, father Walter Meyer, and sister Phyllis Reddy. A memorial scheduled for 1 p.m. on March 16th at Asbury Methodist Church, with a reception to follow at the church. Pastor Sean Smith will officiate the ceremony. All are welcome to attend and celebrate Jerry's life. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to the Permian Basin Rehab Center at 620 North Allegheny Avenue. Condolences can be sent to Acres West. Elizabeth June Story, 83, of Odessa, passed away on March 11th in Odessa. June was born in San Angelo to Frank and Dorothy Midgley on February 16, 1937. June is preceded in death by her husband, Robert Lewis Story, father and mother, and older brother, Carl Midgley. She is survived by son, Robert Wayne Story, and wife, Leslie, son, Carl Allen Story, and wife, Ginger, sister, Pat Buckle, sister Linda Belmont, and five grandchildren. Her funeral service will be Saturday, March 14th at 4 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home in Odessa. To send family condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Michael Scott Ming, 42, of Odessa, died Saturday, March 7th in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. March 14th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Ramiro Roca de la Rosa, 64, of Odessa, died Sunday, March 8th in Lubbock. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Irma Talamantes Sosa, 73, of Odessa, died Monday, March 9th, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 14th, at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery in the Los Angeles section. Father Timothy Hayter is officiating. arrangements by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Oliveria Ollie Lujan Rodriguez, 82, died Wednesday, March 11th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Willie Bill Smith, 82, died Sunday, March 8th in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. David Omachel, 67, died Thursday, March 12th in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the Odessa American ticket section for Friday, March 13th, 2020. Book discussion. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled a discussion of Deborah Davis's book, Strapless, John Singer Sargent and the Fall of Madame X, at 6 p.m. March 19th. Julie DeLong, Associate Professor of English at Odessa College, will lead the discussion. Country Duo. The Bellamy Brothers are scheduled in concert April 17th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Visit wagnernoel.com for tickets. Sweet Piggy. Charlotte's Web will take the stage with the Kaleidoscope Company at the Permian Playhouse, April 17th through 26th. For more information, visit permianplayhouse.com. Spring Break Camp Showcase Set by Ruth Campbell. Youngsters will put on a showcase of what they've learned during the Permian Playhouse's Spring Break Camp at 6:30 p.m. today, Friday. There is no charge. The playhouse is located at 310 West 42nd Street. Camp Director Zale Harwell said the camp includes children from 4 to 11 years old. What they do is they have five different classes they're going to, and like the one you see here, they're learning dance. They also have music, they have puppets, they have theater, and the other one is an art class. They're all tied together, like I said. They're learning pieces and parts of a little showcase. So come Friday, they can show their parents what they've been doing, Harwell said. Harwell said this is the first time he has headed up one of the camps. This has been a lot of fun. This is the first one of these I've ever done, and it's really well done, really well organized. From the moment they got dropped off to the moment they get picked up, they've got something to do. They've got somewhere to be. They're always engaged in doing. I've been following them around, kind of like a mother hen, making sure they're having fun and everything's good, no one's hurt or sick or upset, Harwell said. He added that the children are all enjoying and all learning something. There's five groups that are teaching them, so when they're in their classes, they have their two teachers and their two counselors, he said. He added that the youngsters have picked up on all the components fast. Serenity Gandhi, an 11-year-old fifth grader at Ireland Elementary School, said she likes everything about the camp. It teaches me how to be more confident and stuff, Gandhi said. Kiara Granado, an 8-year-old third grader at Compass Academy Charter School, said this is her first time attending and it's cool. Granado said she has enjoyed hanging out with friends the most. Caden Harwell, a 14-year-old eighth grader at Montessori Mastery School of Odessa, said he is part of two different kaleidoscope companies and he found the camp participants to be very talented. Of course, every child is talented, Caden Harwell said. You just have to find out what their talent is and show them how to use it. You just experiment. You have them try out different scenes. You see if they're good at singing, dancing, or acting. And once you find out what they do, you just work on their craft. Caden Harwell said he has enjoyed getting to know the children. And not just that, but when they realize that they're succeeding and that their scene is going well, they just get really happy and they just light up, he said. Nitchie Vanderford is the board president of Permian Playhouse. She said registration for the summer camps is coming up, offering a variety of different productions. Main Street Live, scheduled in May. Downtown Midland Street Dance features Marty Stewart. Basin PBS announced this week its annual Main Street Live will be back for 2020. The Basin PBS Street Dance is coming back to downtown Midland on May 28th in front of the Basin PBS studio at 203 North Main Street. Marty Stewart and his fabulous Superlatives will headline. The five-time Grammy winner is a platinum recording artist and a Lifetime Achievement Award recipient from the Americana Music Association, as well as a Grand Ole Opry star, musician, and songwriter. Stewart is known for a traditional style of music, but also for an electric merging of rockabilly, honky-tonk, and traditional country music. His website details. Hits include The Whiskey Ain't Workin', Burn Me Down, Hillbilly Rock, and others. Opening for Stewart will be Scott Kirby and Gary Green. Kirby has a long history as a singer, songwriter, and guitarist with a history of sharing the stage with musical greats such as Jimmy Buffett, Carole King, and others. Press materials detail that he is one of the most requested artists on Sirius XM Radio Margaritaville. Kirby is joined by Gary Green, the world harmonica champion of 1987. Green has also shared the stage with John McCutcheon, Tom Rush, Jimmy Buffett, and others. Green also has performed at the Grand Ole Opry and Nashville's Ryman Theater. Basin PBS is thrilled to be able to host musical greats such as Marty Stewart, Scott Kirby, and Gary Green for our 2020 Main Street Live event. Basin PBS General Manager and CEO Laura Wolf stated in a press release, "This really has become a one-of-a-kind concert event for our communities, and just like everything else we do, Basin PBS wants to make sure everyone is able to have a seat in the audience. We have sponsor levels that are available to fit every budget, plus single tickets are very reasonable for a concert of this level. We can't wait to see everyone on May 28th. Tickets are on the Basin PBS Facebook page, Eventbrite, or the Basin PBS website. General admission tickets are $70 and do not include drinks or food. A cash bar provided by the Buffalo Nickel will be available. No outside food, drinks, or coolers are permitted. Sponsorships and tables are also available. Call 432-563-5728 or email lwolf@basinpbs.org. There are a variety of prices. All sponsor and VIP tables include dinner provided by Wolfman Catering and drink tickets. Top sponsors and VIP will also enjoy an after party inside the Basin PBS studio following Marty Stewart and his fabulous Superlatives. After-party goers will enjoy additional music by Scott Kirby and Gary Green. Follow Basin PBS on Facebook for more on events and programming. www.facebook.com/BasinPBS. Basin PBS is a community-owned and operated 501c3 nonprofit service to the Permian Basin. Donations to Basin PBS are tax-deductible and help promote lifelong learning through local public television education. March sales tax revenue declines from a year ago. The city of Odessa received its March sales tax check that totals more than $5.2 million. The sales tax check was for the amount of $5,254,367.07, which included the economic development sales tax of a quarter cent, a City of Odessa press release stated. The City of Odessa will receive $4,203,493.66, while the Odessa Development Corporation will receive $1,050,873.41. March's sales tax revenue total reportedly showed a decrease of more than a half of $1 million at $523,846.90 as compared to March 2019. The year-to-date total sales tax revenue for fiscal year 2019-20 has increased 39%, which equals $7,534,577 when it's compared to budgeted amount expected at this point in the fiscal year. The 2019-20 year-to-date amount is below the previous fiscal year-to-date amount by $2,579,607.99. The city has budgeted $41.1 million in net sales tax revenues for this current fiscal year. Permian Basin Comic Con X makes move to new location. Event headliner Lou Ferrigno cancels due to health concerns, by Royal McGregor. The Midland County Horseshoe Arena and Pavilion has been home to the Permian Basin Comic Con X for the last 5 years. However, after the completion of the Bush Convention Center, the annual 3-day event begins today, Friday, at the newly opened venue in downtown Midland. Marissa Rutter, the public relations coordinator for Permian Basin Comic Con X, said she's excited about holding the event at the Bush Convention Center, which opened in late September 2019. "We wanted to see if we could bring some fun and some life to the downtown area," said Rutter, who also serves as public relations at 3XC Events and Silverfire LLC. "The Bush Convention Center is pretty, so we wanted to try it out. We don't have a home, per se. We want to see what works best for our event." On Wednesday afternoon, Permian Basin Comic Con X was notified Lou Ferrigno, TV's Incredible Hulk, had to cancel due to health concerns. Permian Basin Comic Con X posted a video of Ferrigno, who said, "I'm on my way to the doctor. I'm under the weather. The doctor advised me not to travel this weekend." Rutter said she hopes Ferrigno will be able to come to the Permian Basin at a later date. "We can't argue with the doctors," she said. "As sad as it makes us, we can't argue with the doctors." With the increased number of cases of coronavirus throughout the United States, Rutter said Permian Basin Comic Con X has increased precautions with sanitizing stations around the event. "We advise there are plenty of bathrooms to keep your hands washed," she said. "If you have any fears, bring a mask. A lot of our vendors sell masks." The event will also have Power Rangers actor Blake Foster, actor and comedian Eric Stohansky, voice actors John Swayze, Rico Fajardo, David Montronga, and Lucy Christian. Rutter says she's expecting around 100 vendors and artists at this year's event. Another mainstay of previous Permian Basin Comic Con X's was Old School Wrestling, but Rutter said schedules didn't line up, so there won't be wrestling this year. "It was a scheduling conflict," Rutter said. STEM Academy Task Force, parents considering options. To help update stakeholders on the status of the University of Texas Permian Basin STEM Academy, a parent meeting was recently held. STEM Academy board and task force member Jake Watkins said nothing was decided, but 4 options were revealed. Watkins said there was a 5th one that he couldn't talk about yet that he heard about after the March 5th meeting. Possibilities are to be a standalone charter school, merge with an existing charter that is in the area, partner with Ector County ISD, but still be a charter school. They would not technically be part of the district, but it would be a partnership with ECISD and STEM, so it would run like it does now. "There's just some logistics with employment of teachers and staff," Watkins said. The 4th option is to stay on campus like STEM Academy is now. He said a decision on what path to take will be made within a year, and then another year after that to implement whatever is decided on. he said things look promising. Currently, the school runs from kindergarten through 11th grade. It will add 12th grade next year. Watkins said there was a great turnout that Thursday night. I think it says a lot about how many people showed and how many are interested, he said. Most coronavirus patients recover. Still, anxiety and fear loom. By Carla K. Johnson and Victoria Milko, Associated Press, Seattle. Amid all the fears, quarantines, and stockpiling of food, it has been easy to ignore the fact that more than 60,000 people have recovered from the coronavirus spreading around the globe. The disease can cause varying degrees of illness and is especially troublesome for older adults and people with existing health problems who are at risk of severe effects, including pneumonia. But for most of those affected, coronavirus creates only mild or moderate symptoms, such as fever and cough, with the vast majority recovering from the virus. According to the World Health Organization, people with mild illness recover in about 2 weeks, while those with more severe ailments may take 3 to 6 weeks to rebound. In mainland China, where the virus first exploded, more than 80,000 people have been diagnosed, but more than 60,000 already have recovered. Because the difference in impact can be so great, global health authorities have the difficult task of alerting the public to the virus's dangers without creating panic. Already, the widespread consequences of the virus have been staggering, sending shockwaves through the world's financial markets. Global oil prices sustained their worst percentage losses since the Gulf War in 1991, and new restrictions were imposed in Italy and in Israel as Holy Week approached. But even some of the most vulnerable patients can fight their way through the disease. Charlie Campbell's father, 89-year-old Eugene Campbell, has been diagnosed with the coronavirus and is hospitalized in Edmonds, Washington. Charlie Campbell said his father's doctor is cautiously optimistic, adding, "Under normal circumstances, he would discharge my dad, but these aren't normal circumstances." Eugene Campbell came to the hospital from Life Care Center, a nursing home in Kirkland that has been linked to a large share of the state's coronavirus deaths. "We went and saw him yesterday, and he looked pretty good," Campbell said, noting that his father is breathing normally and his vital signs and heart rate are good. He may be the oldest person to recover from coronavirus. In China, Tan Xiyang, a postgraduate student at a university in Wuhan, had traveled to her family home in Yicheng over 180 miles a day when she began to experience minor symptoms from the virus. She went to the hospital where she was given common cold medicine and sent home. It was only after her symptoms persisted and she visited the hospital a second time for an outpatient CT scan and received a call asking her to come back, did she understand her symptoms came from something other than the common flu. After many days and a number of tests, doctors eventually told her that the infection had spread to both of her lungs. "After that, I felt a heavy head while walking, unable to breathe, and nauseous," Tan said in a video blog post. But after over 2 weeks in the hospital, a CT scan showed her infection was disappearing and she was discharged. For some who have been quarantined, anxiety and dread that they will become stigmatized by friends, neighbors, and coworkers have equaled their concerns about their physical health. A few patients with the virus who were interviewed by the Associated Press, all of them passengers on the Diamond Princess cruise ship that ended up quarantined off Japan, described symptoms that were no stronger than a regular cold or flu. "It's been a 2 on a scale of 10, said Carl Goldman, hospitalized in Omaha, Nebraska since February 17th, after developing a 103-degree fever on a chartered flight from Japan to the U.S. Goldman is staying hydrated with Gatorade. He said he continued coughing more than 2 weeks after he first got sick, but would probably only have missed one day of work if he had been diagnosed with the cold or flu. He stays active by pacing in his room, trying to match his pre-sickness routine of 10,000 daily steps on the pedometer. I totally get this is where I need to be, and I need to be cleared of this before I'm released, he said. American Greg Yerricks, who was diagnosed along with his wife Rose Yerricks on The Diamond Princess, said he had no symptoms and felt as healthy as he did on any other normal day. If I was home, I would be out doing everything I normally do, he said in an interview conducted via Facebook calls when the couple were still hospitalized and in Nagoya, Japan. Rose Yerricks tested negative when she got to the hospital. For Greg Yerricks, it was the couple's mental health that faced the biggest threat as they spent days in quarantine, isolated from friends and family, and deprived of any direct human contact. It's like being a prisoner, he said. You pace, you worry, you fret, you imagine all sorts of things. You have no control. Greg Yerricks said that he and his wife, who have since been released from the hospital, plan to go to counseling to work through the mental stress they experienced. Fellow cruise passenger Rebecca Frazier knows how they feel. I don't get to speak with anyone, she said in a Facebook call while still hospitalized in Nagoya. I have a little window in my room but cannot leave. The only contact I have is through Facebook Messenger. I would never wish this on anyone. Frazier said one of the things she found most frustrating was waiting for her test results to come back. Patients who have been diagnosed with the virus must have two consecutive negative tests before they can be released. Frazier is now out of the hospital, but is worried about being stigmatized by her home community. U.S. ban on European visitors escalates travel industry pain, by David Koenig and Paul Wiseman, Associated Press. President Donald Trump's 30-day ban on most Europeans entering the United States is the latest calamity for a global travel industry already reeling from falling bookings and canceled reservations as people try to avoid contracting and spreading the coronavirus. The ban, announced Wednesday and set to begin Friday, won't apply to Americans trying to return home, though they will be subject to enhanced health screening, or to citizens of the United Kingdom. But coming on top of similar restrictions imposed by many other governments, Trump's move is bound to drastically escalate the upheaval facing global airlines and travelers on some of the most heavily traveled routes. The disruptions to air travel are rippling through economies in a blow to hotels, car rental companies, museums, and restaurants. Lucrative business travel was already down sharply because conferences have been canceled and companies have instructed employees to skip all but essential trips. And travel from and within Asia has been restricted for weeks as authorities try to stop the spread of the virus there. Airlines scrambled Thursday to adjust to the new restrictions, with many telling customers they were still assessing options and asking for patience from those trying to contact them. French retirees Jean-Michel and Christine Doe were among those weighing their options. They had spent months planning a 2,200-mile road trip across America and planned to fly to New Orleans later this month. Now they're trying to reschedule for later in the year. When I heard this morning, I was very disappointed but not surprised, Jean-Michel Doe said. All the preparations ruined. There are usually about 400 flights a day from Europe to the United States, according to flight tracker FlightAware. Airlines have already been slashing their flight schedules, especially on international routes, to cope with a sharp decline in travel demand among fearful customers. About 72.4 million passengers flew from the U.S. to Europe in the year ended last June, making it the most popular international destination, according to Transportation Department figures. About one-third of those passengers fly on U.S. airlines and the rest on foreign carriers. Trump didn't mention restrictions on Americans traveling to Europe. Even before Trump's announcement, the International Airline Travelers Association was forecasting a 24% fall in Europe's passenger traffic this year and $37 billion in lost potential ticket sales. Italy, which is all but closed off as authorities try to control the spread of the virus there, has been particularly hard hit. In his address from the Oval Office, Trump said U.S. restrictions on people coming from China and other countries with early outbreaks of COVID-19 had held down the number of cases in the United States compared with Europe. He blamed the European Union for failing to immediately stop travel from China and other hotspots, which he said had led to clusters of outbreaks in the U.S. seeded by travelers from Europe. Trump has called the disease a foreign virus and claimed that U.S. clusters were seeded by European travelers. He announced that all European travel would be cut off, but U.S. officials later said that restrictions would apply only to most foreign citizens who have been in Europe's passport-free travel zone at any point for 14 days prior to their arrival to the United States. The European Union disapproves of the fact that the U.S. decision to impose a travel ban was taken unilaterally and without consultation. European Council President Charles Michel and European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said in a joint statement, "The new U.S. restrictions apply to most foreign nationals who have been in the 26-nation Schengen area of Europe in the 14 days before their scheduled arrival in the United States. The Schengen countries, which do not restrict travel among each other, include Germany, France, Italy, and Spain." The World Health Organization on Wednesday labeled COVID-19 a pandemic, citing its alarming spread and severity. Some experts have raised doubts over the effectiveness of tight border controls now that it has spread to so many countries. In Asia, where the virus was first reported, governments have been imposing various restrictions on arrivals, requirements for health certificates, and other precautions for more than a month. An industry trade group warned that airlines worldwide could lose up to $113 billion in revenue from the virus, several times the damage caused by the 2001 terror attacks in the U.S. Since mid-February, shares of American Airlines have dropped by nearly half, United Airlines by more than one-third, and Delta Airlines more than one-fourth. This is Michael reading a few business articles from the Midland Reporter Telegram. Oil plunges deeper after travel ban deals blow to demand. Oil headed for the biggest weekly decline since 2008, after President Donald Trump said the U.S. would restrict travel from Europe for the next 30 days in an attempt to contain the coronavirus, pummeling fuel demand. Futures in New York tumbled as much as 9% and are poised for a 24% drop this week. At the same time, Brent crude's one-year structure collapsed into a super contango for the first time in years, suggesting a large oversupply as responses by the U.S. and European policymakers have failed to stem the rout. Trump called on Congress to pass some tax relief measures immediately, but stopped short of delivering a detailed economic rescue package. The European Central Bank left rates unchanged, though it temporarily increased its quantitative easing program and took steps to boost liquidity. U.S. equities plunged by more than 8%, triggering a 15-minute New York Stock Exchange-mandated halt in trading for the second time this week. "We're getting the perfect storm with a travel ban," said Michael Lynch, president of Strategic Energy and Economic Research Incorporated. "This collapse is inciting the fear this will be a full-blown recession." Crude has shaved about a quarter of its value this week alone, and gasoline futures tumbled to the lowest since 2008 on Thursday. The protracted rout has also pushed the oil market to unprecedented levels of volatility as the corona pandemic hits demand and a battle for market share by the world's largest oil-producing nations escalates further. Saudi Arabia is unleashing a wave of crude toward Europe, traditionally the backyard for Russian sales, pledging to supply refineries with as much as three times their usual intake from the kingdom. There's a prospect of a prolonged battle as analysts from Bank of America Corporation to Raiffeisen Bank expect Russia's low production costs, flexible tax system, and free-floating ruble will allow its producers to respond. In the latest sign of the deep schism between the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies, top producers signaled no appetite for talks to bridge their differences by canceling a planned meeting of technical experts this month. The Kremlin earlier said it has no plans for oil talks with Saudi Arabia. Buffett's Oxy bet that infuriated Icon is hard hit by oil crash. By Catherine Chiglinski and Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. It had all the trappings of a classic Warren Buffett deal. There were the preferred shares created just for him, the warrants giving him an option to buy more common stock and a hefty dividend, 8%, which came to a cool $800 million a year on the $10 billion he plunked down. On the face, the terms were so favorable for Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway Incorporated and so onerous for the company, the oil driller Occidental Petroleum Corporation, that fellow billionaire investor Carl Icahn seethed with indignation. It was, he wrote, like taking candy from a baby. But now, some 11 months later, Buffett's bet on Occidental is suddenly a far cry from the slam dunk that it once appeared. Few large companies, if any, in the U.S. shale patch have been hit harder than Occidental by the collapse in oil prices this week. And while Buffett's preferred shares don't trade, the plunge in price on the company's common stock, down 70% in the last 12 days, and in its benchmark bonds, down 25%, provide clues about the market's perception of the value of his investment. The stock dropped 16% to $9.95 Thursday before trading was halted due to reaching a circuit breaker limit. It closed at $58.88 when Buffett invested last April. For Buffett, the episode marks another setback for one of his key investments, just a year after the Kraft Heinz write-down unleashed turmoil in that business. It also raises questions once again about how he intends to use his massive cash holdings, $128 billion at last blush, with few wholly appealing investment options to choose from. The $10 billion investment in Occidental, his first major deal in 4 years, was instrumental in allowing the company to win a bidding war for Anadarko Petroleum Corporation. But the transaction is only exacerbating Occidental's troubles. Previously, a steady, diversified oil producer, Occidental is now a heavily indebted shale oil producer, highly subject to the whims of crude prices. Buffett himself conceded last year that the success of the deal depended on the vagaries of the oil market. The structure of the deal was a classic Berkshire deal, Kathy Seifert, an analyst at CFRA Research, said. Again, timing is everything, and what a difference a year makes. Berkshire didn't respond to requests for comment. Things haven't totally unraveled on Berkshire's investment yet, of course. For now, in fact, the preferred shares continue to throw off cash, $200 million every quarter, and also rank above the common stock when it comes to liquidation. Berkshire does hold some common shares, but they totaled just $780 million at the end of the year, equal to only 0.3% of Berkshire's entire stock portfolio. Buffett's record of preferred stock deals have often played out in his favor. He bought stakes in General Electric and Goldman Sachs during the financial crisis. Both of those preferred stakes paid 10% dividends. But he's been struggling to find attractive ways to put his near-record cash pile to work. while his company has built up a more than $70 billion stock holding in Apple through the end of 2019, Buffett had failed to find major transactions since his 2016 acquisition of Precision Cast Parts. And while the Occidental deal was lauded by analysts at the time, it put Buffett in a notoriously volatile industry. Few predicted, of course, that a split between Russia and its one-time OPEC allies would spark a price war. The ensuing crash in those prices eventually forced Occidental to cut its dividend for the first time in three decades Tuesday. Buffett's preferred stake was unaffected by the cut, but Berkshire's common stock holding will feel the ripple effects unless Buffett's company tweaked that holding since the end of the year. Cutting capital expenditure by a third and slashing the dividend almost 90% will help drive Occidental's break-even costs down to the low $30 a barrel range, Chief Executive Officer Vicki Holub said in a statement Tuesday. The move and broader stock market gains helped the company stock surge nearly 15% that day. But the cut to Occidental's prized dividend limits payouts to common stockholders, including Icon, who has been battling the company for months over the Anadarko deal. Buffett figuratively took her to the cleaners, Icon wrote in July about Buffett's preferred stock deal. Icon, an Occidental shareholder, said in February, ahead of the oil market crash, that the ill-advised bet on Anadarko and any slump in oil prices could jeopardize the dividend. Icon said late Wednesday that he had increased his stake in Occidental to about 10% from 2.5% previously, and he renewed his attack on the company's board. In other cultures, they would have the dignity to resign or worse, Icon said by phone. In the army, they would be court-martialed, but here they would probably grant themselves bonuses because their stock options have collapsed. A representative for Occidental declined to comment on Icon's position. In the short term, at least, the Anadarko deal has come at a major cost to shareholders. Occidental is down 82% since its interest in Anadarko first became public almost a year ago, compared to a 49% decline in the S&P 500 Energy Index, and a similar decline in oil. Occidental's dwindling market value has raised speculation over whether Buffett would ever buy the company outright. While Buffett has the funds, an eventual purchase would depend on his outlook for the oil market and other variables, said David Cass, a professor of finance at the University of Maryland's Robert H. Smith School of Business. It's certainly well within the $128 billion that Buffett has to spend, Cass said, but would the risks far outweigh the expected award? Oil set for worst week since 2008 with virus hitting demand, by Elizabeth Lowe and Alex Longley, Bloomberg. Oil is on track for its biggest weekly decline since 2008, as the coronavirus pandemic wreaks havoc on fuel demand and threatens global economic stability. Futures in New York tumbled 4.5% on Thursday and are on track for a 24% weekly drop. President Donald Trump's restriction on travel from Europe for the next 30 days in an attempt to contain the coronavirus darkened the outlook for fuel demand. At the same time, Brent crude's one-year structure collapsed into a super contango for the first time since 2015, suggesting a large oversupply as responses by the U.S. and European policymakers have failed to stem the price rout. The fear of an economic crisis reverberated across U.S. equities, triggering a 15-minute New York Stock Exchange mandated halt in trading for the second time this week. The S&P 500 plunged into bear market, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 10% in its latest rout since Black Monday in 1987. This is a downward spiral, said Michael Lynch, president of Strategic Energy and Economic Research Incorporated. This collapse is inciting the fear This will be a full-blown recession. The pain is going to be so sharp for everybody. Trump proposed tax relief measures to stave off the risk of a recession, but stopped short of providing a detailed economic rescue package. Meanwhile, the European Central Bank left rates unchanged, though it temporarily increased its quantitative easing program and took steps to boost liquidity. Crude spiked to unprecedented levels of volatility as the coronavirus pandemic cripples demand amid travel disruptions worldwide, and as a battle for market share by the world's largest oil-producing nations escalates further. In another sign of weakness in the energy complex, gasoline futures in New York plunged 19% to the lowest level in more than a decade on Thursday. "This is the capitulation day for gasoline," said Walter Zimmerman, chief technical strategist at ICAP Technical Analyst. The virus has magnified the chronic glut, and today was a reckoning. Amid the escalating market share battle, Russian oil producers doubled down on Thursday, saying they are able to operate even if prices drop further and will ramp up production beginning April 1st. The Kremlin earlier said it has no plans for oil talks with Saudi Arabia. "All bets are off," said Leo Mariani, equity research analyst at KeyBank Capital Markets. "It's clear the price battle may not be over in the short term. Having a supply and demand crisis at the same time is unprecedented. It's going to be a painful time." Saudi Arabia is unleashing a wave of crude toward Europe, traditionally the backyard for Russian sales, pledging to supply refineries with as much as three times their usual intake from the kingdom. There's a prospect of a prolonged battle, as analysts from the Bank of America Corporation to Raiffeisenbank expect Russia's low production costs, flexible tax system, and free-floating ruble will allow its producers to respond. "The mighty bull market falls victim to a tiny virus," by Stan Cho, AP business writer. New York. "In the end, the mighty bull was slayed by a tiny virus. The longest bull market in U.S. history can now be said to have lasted almost 11 years and rewarded investors with a return of 529% based on the performance of the S&P 500, including dividends. The bull officially ran from March 9, 2009 until February 19, 2020, when it began the 26.7% dive that, as of Thursday, has taken it into bear market territory. The record run for stocks appeared fairly smooth, but there were some hiccups. The bull survived a downgrade to the U.S. credit rating and the European debt crisis in 2011, two slowdowns in China, 2015 and 2016, and a market freakout over higher interest rates in late 2018, after investors had been spoiled by ultra-low rates for a decade. But the coronavirus scare flooded the market with too much uncertainty. Investors hate uncertainty more than anything, as the Wall Street saying goes, and the first reaction for many is to sell. And this new virus has certainly been uncertain. The coronavirus has infected around 128,000 people worldwide and killed over 4,700. The death toll in the U.S. climbed to 39, with over 1,300 infections. Corporate profits are the lifeblood of the stock market, and they are getting hit on two ends. On one side, the virus has snarled supply chains around the world, with factories shut due to workers out on quarantine. That gives companies less things to sell. On the other side, the virus is causing the cancellation of events, from professional basketball games to concerts. Two presidential candidates will hold a debate this weekend without a live audience, and worried consumers are staying away from stores, public gathering spaces, and flights, wiping away demand. On Thursday, the S&P 500 fell 260 points, or 9.5%, to 2,480. It was the index's biggest percentage drop since Black Monday in 1987. Still, the market is nowhere near the depths it was at in March 2009, when the market finally hit a bottom of 17 months of selling that knocked 55% off the stock value of the S&P 500. The amazing rally for stocks that ensued altered the makeup of the market, elevating technology stocks to a dominating position and lessening the weight of industrial and energy companies. Back in March 2009, the biggest companies were familiar names with long histories in traditional industries like oil, ExxonMobil, and the makers of detergent and other household products, Procter & Gamble. There is, however, one company that's among the most valuable today that was also among the big five back then, Microsoft. These days, technology companies dominate the top five, as they do the market overall. After Microsoft, there's Apple, Amazon, Google's parent company, Alphabet, and Facebook. At the beginning of the bull market, Apple's iPhone was just 2 years old, and Google had just released its Android operating system for smartphones.
Adoptive Mom writes rules for strangers with questions. Dear Abby for Friday. Dear Abby, I'm an adoptive mother who has had more than my fair share of inappropriate comments directed at me and my children. They usually come from strangers or acquaintances. I'm about up to here with them, so I thought I would write you about etiquette for interacting with adoptive families. Though we may stand out to you, we think of ourselves as a family like any other. Please do not start a conversation with us that has the sole purpose of pointing out the obvious. Remember that my children have ears. Please do not ask questions in front of them about them or their adoption. Don't ask in private unless you are a close friend. Better yet, let me broach the subject. Please do not always comment on my daughter's hair. Yes, it is nicely braided and decorated with beautiful beads. But isn't there something else you can say about them, maybe just once? And please don't talk in front of them about how hard it must be for me to do their hair. I love braiding it. Please don't say I am a saint for adopting them. I chose to adopt because I never wanted to have biological children. And please don't say how nice it is for me to love them so much. Why would you expect that I wouldn't love my children? Please do not pity my children. They have amazing lives, are fiercely loved, and have bright futures ahead. And please do not introduce me to others as someone who has adopted two girls from Africa. Because my daughters are black does not mean they are from Africa. I would much prefer you simply say, Anne has 2 8-year-old daughters. And last, please remember that you and I are both people who love our families, and we have more in common than you might think. Anne from California. Dear Anne, thank you for a great letter. Sometimes well-meaning people simply don't think about the impact their words can have when they begin a conversation. I hope my readers will take your words to heart because they are valid. Dear Abby, while separating photographs after my divorce from my wife, I found some photographs of relatives' and friends' weddings. Is there any protocol on what to do with them? In some cases, the marriages and friendships have ended, so I assume I should just dispose of them, correct? I will send my ex-wife any photos of her and her family, but none that include my family. Is this the right way to go? We don't live in the same area anymore, and our families were never close. I would be interested to hear what you think should be done with family photos that include me, my ex-wife, and our children. Should they just go to the children? I am in a new committed relationship, and I do not wish to keep any photos of my ex for any reason. Can you please help? Needs to know in New York. Dear Needs to Know, send the family pictures to your children and instruct them to share them with your ex if she would like to have them. If you still have a relationship with the friends and relatives, inform them that you found the photos and ask if they would like to have them. That would be the considerate thing to do.
Here is local sports from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and Odessa American. MISD suspends athletic events until further notice, by Christopher Hattern. Midland ISD has suspended all athletic games and events until further notice due to the coronavirus pandemic, Midland ISD Executive Director of Athletics Blake Felt announced late Tuesday. We just felt at this point in time, because of the growing situation, that this is what needs to be done, Felt said. It's a situation that continues to grow and evolve. That being the case, we felt like better for our students to be on the safe side. As of now, Midland ISD sports teams will still be permitted to hold practices, but Felt added, like the entire situation, that may change Friday. Felt said the Midland High baseball team will return home today from the Leander tournament in the greater Austin area, and the Lee baseball team will head home from the First Bank Classic in Lubbock today, Friday. The Midland High softball team's 4 p.m. home game against La Mesa also won't be played. Felt said District 2 6A soccer, baseball, and softball contests have been postponed until further notice. The Midland High and Lee girls and boys soccer teams were previously scheduled to play their District 2 6A finales on Tuesday. Lee and Midland High were also slated to begin district play in softball on Tuesday and district play in baseball next Thursday. Felt said all postponed district games would be reevaluated as their initial scheduled dates get closer. We are going to continue to evaluate this 24/7, Felt said. Felt said Ector County ISD Athletic Department is also suspending athletic activities. Felt said he was in communication with the Ector County ISD and Abilene ISD athletic departments and Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick throughout the day before making his decision to suspend athletic activities. We decided this is the best thing at this time, Felt said. TAPS announces coronavirus guidelines. The TAPS governing body released its guidelines for private school sporting events Thursday in response to the coronavirus pandemic. For events scheduled over the next few weeks, baseball and softball included, the following rationale shall be used for TAPS school preparation. If a member school closes for reasons associated with the COVID-19 situation, all contests should be postponed until a later date, when all schools have resumed play. If a member school is in session but chooses to restrict travel or competition for reasons associated with the COVID-19 situation, all contests should be postponed until a later date when all schools have resumed play. If member schools are in session with no limitation to participate, then contests should go ahead as scheduled. The key component at this time is that contests or events shall be postponed and not be considered a forfeit. These considerations shall apply to individual sports, team sports, and fine art activities. Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.